organs. They get rid of their choirs. So you have a tiny little Reformed Baptist movement in this country of about 24 dead musicless churches.
Because if you have any wavering in your confidence about the integrity of your translation of the Bible, it'll suck the conviction right out of your heart.
And that leads to some very interesting, heretical, and very important conclusions.
Hello and welcome to Word Magazine. This is Jeff Riddle. I am the pastor of Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Charlottesville, Virginia. We are the only confessional Reformed Baptist Church in Central Virginia. Proud to be that and have fellowship with other Reformed Baptist churches here in the Commonwealth and beyond. And we're thankful for that fellowship. Today is Wednesday, August the 13th, 2014, and this is episode 24 of Word Magazine, which is an occasional commentary on theology and doctrine and culture, books, and other such things. The last one of these that I did was in April, and I'm trying to get back on track to do another. I really would love to do one every single week. I have lots of ideas, lots that have to fall by the wayside, and I'm not able to get to. But I'm doing it today, aren't I? So it's a beautiful day here in Central Virginia. We're getting that unseasonably cool August weather, global warming, I guess. It's been a gorgeous month. I was taking some vacation last week, was down at the beach with my family, and had the opportunity to do lots of reading, and I've really done a lot of catching up on my reading this summer. I really loved to read. I'm normally reading a lot, and really in the spring I was busy with so many things I wasn't able to do as much reading as I like to do. And I have been able to do some catching up this summer. One of the things that our family does, I guess, I don't know how many years we've done this, probably 10 years at least, is every summer we have what we call a family reading contest. And it's been a number of years since I've won, because now my kids read lots and lots more than I ever think of reading in the summer. But anyways, we take a period of time, maybe a month or two, and we keep a record. And every time you read a book, you have to write down the author and the title and the publisher, the year published, the number of pages, and the date you completed the work. And then we keep a record of that. Everybody has their own sheet. In the family, and my wife and I and my five children, ranging in age from 8 to 21, and we give an award at the end of the summer reading contest to the person who read the most books and to the person who read the most total pages. And the prize is one double scoop of ice cream. We go out for ice cream. The end of our contest will actually be tomorrow, August the 14th. And it looks like my 10-year-old son, Isaiah, is going to sweep the board, both with the number of books and the number of pages read for all of us. But he's read, I think, over 3,000 pages in the last, I think the contest lasts like a month and a half. And he's read over 20 books, but at any rate, he's smoked all of us, me included. But anyway, we all go out for ice cream, And everybody gets a single scoop, but the winners get the double scoop. And, you know, it doesn't take much motivation, particularly with kids. It's more the competition than having fun. So if you don't currently have a summer family reading contest, I would encourage you to do it. It's also great, you know, just to sit around in the evening, the summer evening, and have no TV on and just have everybody sitting around reading a book. It's great. When that happens. But at any rate, one of the books that I read this summer was by Rodney Stark. And Rodney Stark is a professor of sociology at Baylor University. He's pretty well known, particularly in sort of culturally conservative circles. One of the blurbs in one of his books describes him as the university professor of the social sciences at Baylor University. Says before earning his PhD at the University of California, Berkeley, he was a staff writer for several major publications. Among his many books are the influential studies The Rise of Christianity and One True God, Historical Consequences of Monotheism. I think he taught at the University of Washington for a long time, for decades before coming to Baylor. Very interesting man, very gifted writer, very productive scholar. He's written apparently a textbook in sociology that's widely used, but he's come to be known in more recent years for the books that he's written about culture and society and how Christianity has influenced Western culture, Western ideas, and given sort of an edge to the West in the production of science, technology, and being more humane, respecting human rights, and so forth. And so obviously he's a favorite of Christians and sort of cultural conservatives in the West. The book I read that I want to make a few comments on was his book titled The Victory of Reason, and it's subtitled How Christianity Led to Freedom, Capitalism, and Western Success. And this book was published by Harper in 2005. So it's, you know, kind of an old book now. It's 9 years old. I discovered Stark. I think the first book I read by him was the book For the Glory of God, and it has the sub title How Monotheism Led to Reformation, Science, Witch Hunts, and the End of Slavery. And that was from Princeton University Press in 2004. And I remember I read that book maybe a year or two after it came out, and it was just a groundbreaking, you know, book. And at the time, I had written a blog that had drawn a lot of comments from people in Charlottesville who were pagans and Wiccans, and they were sort of attacking traditional Christianity. I just read Stark's book, and I was able to use a lot of information from that book to sort of refute sort of the ideas that they were challenging, saying that Christianity was against science, saying that Christianity had promoted slavery. These sort of things that Stark just soundly debunks in the book For the Glory of God. He talks about how it was Christianity that led to the end of slavery in the Western world, at least, how that, contrary to a lot of the things that we hear today, it was precisely in the West, in Europe, where Christianity had the biggest influence, that modern science and technology developed, and it came out of a Christian worldview that says that the created order is good, and then human beings are here to have domain over creation, and so it's from that the Christian worldview that you get the development of science and technology. And a lot of those ideas are carried forward as well in The Victory of Reason, which is written just a year after he wrote For the Glory of God. And I don't know if you're like this. I'm like this sometimes. If I read somebody and I like their work, then, you know, I want to read more of the things that they've written. I'm doing that right now. This summer I read Ayaan Hirsi Ali's book Infidel, and then I got her book Nomad, A Clash of Civilizations, and I want to get another book by her, collection of essays called The Caged Virgin. And then I also, this summer, I read Paul Johnson's book Intellectuals, which is a collection of biographical sketches of sort of post-Enlightenment intellectuals and authors, from Rousseau to Tolstoy to Ernest Hemingway, and really good biographies and really insightful analysis of how these men who overthrew confessional religion, confessional Christianity, and who wanted to claim moral high ground for their humanistic views, ended up in their personal lives to be inconsistent, even abusive. And so anyways, I read Paul Johnson's Intellectuals, and then I got, and actually read at the beach last week, Paul Johnson's biography of Darwin from 2012, and I'm wanting to get and read more of Paul Johnson's stuff. The point is, a lot of times when I read someone, I really like them, then I want to read the other things that they've written. And I feel that way about Stark, sort of bringing things full circle. Having read my gateway for discovering Stark was reading For the Glory of God. And now I follow that up by reading the book The Rise of Christianity, and actually used it, this book, as a supplementary textbook in my New Testament Early Christianity course at Piedmont Community College last summer, and the students seem to really enjoy it. Hopefully I'm going to use it again. But that book is great too. I really need to do a podcast that just reviews that book. The subtitle of it is How the Obscure Marginal Jesus Movement Became the Dominant Religious Force in the Western World in a Few Centuries. And then after I read The Rise of Christianity, I read also Rodney Stark's book titled The Triumph of Christianity. In that book, it's a lot of the ideas in The Triumph of Christianity are also in The Rise of Christianity. It's written on a little more popular level. And it was the Word Magazine Christian Book of the Year in 2011. I would highly recommend that book as well. So anyways, The Victory of Reason is my fourth Rodney Stark book, and I want to read more. I particularly would like to read his book on the Crusades that is was out. And but at any rate, I wanted to reflect a little bit on some of the content in The Victory of Reason. A lot of the information in it is consistent with the other things that I've read in Stark. He starts off by talking about how Christianity is unique in that it's the, as he puts it, it's the only religion where there is sophisticated, highly rational, the sophisticated, highly rational discipline of theology is developed, where there is formal reasoning about God. And he points out that the concept of theology and theologizing is really something you only find in the West and in Christianity. He says, for example, there are no theologians in the East. If you look at an Eastern religion like Taoism, there's really not the development of a systematic theological tradition. And he, you know, points out that Christianity has always been able to adapt. It's been able to offer sort of progress in doctrinal reasoning, and this is accounted for then, you know, a more enlightened, progressive attitude that you find in Christianity that you don't find often in other religions. He would say Judaism shares with Christianity this outlook as well. And then he's keen to say that there are practical ramifications of this. For example, the Christian belief in human progress, in humans developing a fuller, greater understanding of God and the world that God has created, leads Christianity to have advances in science and in technology. He makes the point that there really weren't great technological innovations in the Greco-Roman times. Great technological developments didn't arise in Islam or in the East, in China, but really only in the West. Here's a statement from page 14. He says, "Real science arose only once in Europe. China, Islam, India, and ancient Greece and Rome each had a highly developed alchemy, but only in Europe did alchemy develop into chemistry. By the same token, many societies developed elaborate systems of astrology, but only in Europe did astrology lead to astronomy." Why, he asked again, the answer has to do with the images of God. And he points out that because Christians believed in a God who demanded that people reason, and that they understand that he made the world, and he made the world as a reasonable world, and he made human beings to be those who have dominion in the world, and to manage and to understand the world, that you have the development of, again, science and technology and so forth in the West. So it's a very pro-Western, very pro-Christian sort of viewpoint. And then outside of science and technology, you know, he says it's in the West where you had moral innovation, we had the rise of individualism, and it's in the West that you had the abolition eventually of slavery. And again, these are some of the same themes that he develops in a lot of other of his works. I think for apologetics, this is a very useful book, particularly talking to modern people who tend to have quite the opposite views of Christianity. You see it as backward, you see it as retarding progress. And then I've had interactions with people in person, online, who have wanted to denigrate Christianity and who wrongly believe that Christianity was responsible for the propagation of slavery. And of course, you know, a lot of times what they seize on is the fact that there were conservative, even Calvinistic Christians in the American South. And Stark does a good job of pointing out the unique circumstances of that in comparison to what generally happened in Christianity. I think even in the South, what did you have? You had abolitionists in the North. You had Christianity bringing an end, having a huge influence in bringing an end to slavery in America as well. There was one part of this book, though, that I began to sort of be bothered by, and that is that in this book, The Victory of Reason, where he focuses a lot particularly on sort of economics, how capitalism developed in Western Europe. And he makes the argument that capitalism didn't develop just because of Protestantism because of the Protestant Reformation. And in saying this, he's disagreeing with the ideas put forward by those like Max Weber, who talked about the Protestant work ethic. He makes the argument that it wasn't Protestantism, but there was capitalism that developed in Italy and places that were predominantly under the influence of Roman Catholicism. It wasn't Protestantism, but it was Christianity itself that led to capitalism. And I was, you know, not tracking 100% with that. In fact, at several points as I was reading this, I began to wonder if Stark was Roman Catholic. I had not seen him in his books make any comment. I'd wondered before, was he a Christian? Because he writes so positively about Christianity. I thought he was probably a Christian of some stripe. Reading this book, I thought surely he must be a Roman Catholic because he's in particular saying that no, it wasn't Protestantism, but it was just Christianity in general, or particularly he sings the praises of Roman Catholicism in Italy and the influence it had on Europe and so forth. But then I got to further on in the book, after he talks about the development of capitalism in Europe, he talks about South America, North and South America. And this begins about in chapter 7 of his book. And he draws a contrast between how North America and South America were both colonized by Christians. And then he asks, why is it then that North America exploded with growth and progress and prosperity, whereas in South America the growth was much slower? And of course, the obvious difference between North America and South America was that South America was colonized by the Spanish and the Portuguese, and you had the predominance of Roman Catholicism, whereas North America was colonized eventually predominantly by the British and the Dutch, and this brought in Protestantism. And his analysis, though, is that the key issue was not Catholicism in the South and Protestantism in the North. But his argument is that the key to the difference was what he calls their religious economies. And the problem was that in South America, there was a monopoly. It was monopolized by Catholicism. One of the arguments he makes is that actually South America was never fully Christianized, if we can use that term. A lot of people actually held on to their pre-Christian beliefs, and the Christianity was only nominal, and therefore it hasn't been surprising in the modern era when evangelicalism has grown in South America, because many people weren't really Roman Catholics. He talks about how there's a great disparity between the number of priests and the population. But anyways, going back to more like the 18th and 19th centuries, he says the problem with that impeded a sort of the growth of vigorous Christianity would have a positive influence in South America. The big hindrance was the fact that Roman Catholicism was a monopoly religion. You had priests who really didn't have to compete with other denominations. And so this led to indolence. One of Stark's themes is that when there's a monopoly, religion becomes stagnant. Whereas he contrasts that with North America. And one of the things I like about reading Stark's books is all the facts and factoids that he has. Really interesting stuff. I know one of the things that in the first half of the book that he points out, some of the technological innovations that happened in the West, is a fascinating section where he talks about eyeglasses and how eyeglasses were developed in the West, and particularly, let's see, it's on pages 43 and 44. He talks about how eyeglasses were invented in Italy. And let's see, this is, let me just read a little bit. This is page 43 and 44. He says, "It is a fact of human biology that many people have defective eyesight from childhood, and that for most of the rest, sight begins to decline by middle age. Before the invention of eyeglasses, a very large proportion of working adults, especially those engaged in crafts, were greatly hindered in what tasks they could perform. Thus, the invention of eyeglasses in about 1284 in northern Italy had dramatic effects on productivity. Without glasses, large numbers of medieval craft workers were washed up at 40. With glasses, not only could most of these people continue, but because of their experience, their most productive years still lay ahead." He points out that, again, it's only in the West, and starting from northern Italy, that you have the invention of eyeglasses. He says, "Even so, in 1492, when Columbus set sail, eyeglasses were still known only in Europe." And he uses that just as one example of a technological advance that happened in Europe that didn't happen in other places, and that aided to the productivity and prosperity of Europe. I've used that example several times, like in preaching, talking about an understanding of the first century, how Jesus often encounters so many people who are blind, or how perhaps the Apostle Paul was blind. He writes to the Galatians and says, "I know you would have given your eyes to me," or he ends some of his letters by saying, "See with what large letters I write to you." And I think about myself. I'm in my 40s, and if I take my eyeglasses off, I my kids are just blurs around the table looking at me. And if eyeglasses hadn't been invented, I'd be like blind Bartimaeus. I'd be sitting on the corner somewhere begging at my age. And I lost my sight, deteriorated quickly. But at any rate, that's just one example. Back here on target, one of the things I enjoy about reading him is he just includes so many facts and so much data to back up his claims. And the discussion of the religious diversity in North America at the time of American colonization is really interesting. He has a section, this is page 208, where he lists the number of congregations there were in the 13 American colonies in 1776. And for example, there were 668 congregational churches. There were 588 Presbyterian churches of various stripes. There were 497 Baptist churches of various stripes. There were 495 Church of England congregations in America in 1776, and on down the line, 310 Quaker congregations, 159 German Reformed, there were 150 Lutheran churches, 120 Dutch Reformed churches, 65 Methodist churches, 56 Roman Catholic churches, 31 Moravians, 27 Separatists or Independents, 24 Dunkers. There were 16 Mennonites, 7 Huguenots, 6 Sandemanians, and 5 Jewish synagogues. So it gives you kind of an idea of the makeup of the religious diversity there was in North America. Of course, this proves this point as to why America has continued to be largely a religious nation, is because from the very beginning there was a marketplace competition, and this aided the growth, the vibrance of Christianity in America. And this is the reason why it flagged in places like South America, why I think Stark would go on to say that in places like Europe today, why it appears that Christianity and religion in general is largely stagnant or declining. I might just add that one of the things that this spurred on is I went to YouTube and I'll put a link to this. And Stark gave a series of lectures at Vanderbilt University in 2006, four lectures that were the basis for another one of his books on monotheism, where he talks more about this idea of religious economies, religious marketplaces, and one of his big, you know, theses is that competition is good for religion. It's good for there to be multiple religions that are striving with one another to gain adherence. This is how you have religiously vibrant societies. One critique of what Stark has to say on this point, though, I thought about was, you know, just the fact that, well, why is it that in North America there were allowed to be multiple denominations, whereas in South America the Roman Catholic Church was predominant and the state suppressed the development of competing religions and or competing denominations? And, you know, I think the reason why is that North America was predominated by Protestants, who were the first to allow there to be some measure of religious freedom. And so in that case, Max Weber is right, not just that Protestantism creates a work ethic, but it also creates societies where where diversity is allowed. And so anyway, I would still say Protestantism is the real reason for the vibrance of the West, the development of science and technology in the West, as opposed to merely saying Christianity, meaning Catholicism and Protestantism. But anyway, that's another conversation. At the very end of Rodney Stark's book, The Victory of Reason, he has a final chapter, concluding chapter, and I love this first paragraph. In fact, I used it in a sermon that I preached a couple weeks ago, and the paragraph goes like this. Christianity, this is page 233, Christianity created Western civilization. Had the followers of Jesus remained an obscure Jewish sect, most of you would not have learned to read, and the rest of you would be reading from hand-copied scrolls. Without a theology committed to reason, progress, and moral equality, today the entire world would be about where non-European societies were in, say, 1800. A world with many astrologers and alchemists, but no scientists. A world of despots lacking universities, banks, factories, eyeglasses, chimneys, and pianos. A world where most infants do not live to the age of 5, and many women die in childbirth. A world truly living in dark ages. I just think that's a fascinating quotation because it speaks to the impact of Christianity. And just think of how many people in the United States, in Europe, in other places never recognize with thanksgiving the influence of the Christian movement. And we can say the influence of, I can say confessionally, our Lord Jesus Christ upon their lives. Some theologians use the terminology of common grace. There's some reasons why I sometimes feel uncomfortable with that. I've read some hoaxes on that that's made me question the use of that terminology. But Stark is onto something there. It's not saving grace, but there has been a residual blessing to humanity through the Christian movement. And all we have to do is compare, I think, the peace, prosperity we enjoy in the Western world, so-called Western developed world, in comparison to many other places in the world, just the religious freedom we enjoy compared to say people living in an Islamic influenced nation. Then at the end of the chapter, he has a quotation from a Chinese scholar. This is how the book ends. Another good quotation. He says, this is again him citing this Chinese scholar, who says, "One of the things we were asked to look into was what accounted for the success, in fact, the preeminence of the West all over the world. We studied everything we could from the historical, political, economic, and cultural perspective. At first, we thought it was because you had more powerful guns than we had. Then we thought it was because you had the best political system. Next, we focused on your economic system. But in the past 20 years, we have realized that the heart of your culture is your religion, Christianity. That is why the West is so powerful. The Christian moral foundation of social and cultural life was what made possible the emergence of capitalism and then the successful transition to democratic politics. We don't have any doubt about this." And then Stark, after that quotation, ends the last word of his book, "The Victory of Reason," is, "Neither do I," meaning I affirm what this guy says. It was Christianity that led to the democratic political system. It was Christianity that led to capitalism. It was Christianity that led to technological advancements and so forth. So if you haven't discovered Rodney Stark, I would commend him to you. Very interesting. I think it's helpful for apologetics, helpful for just appreciating the Christian faith. The sermon I preach where I use that quote, though, about we would be in the dark ages were it not for Christianity, made the point that although what Stark says is true, he doesn't say enough. It's not merely that without Christ we wouldn't have eyeglasses, chimneys, or pianos, or universities, or banks, or hospitals. It's that if we didn't have Christ, we would be in a spiritual dark ages. We would be hopeless. We would still be trapped in our sin. That's the real impact of Christianity. Not that it gave us capitalism or free elections or human rights, but that it gave us the ultimate liberty that a person can find in Christ. And again, I still got the curiosity about Stark's religious background. I'm still friends with my old college professor, Ralph Wood, who teaches at Baylor, and I'm going to have to, next time I talk to Dr. Wood, maybe ask him if he knows Dr. Stark and has any insights into Mr. Stark's confessional perspective. But I looked on it online and I found an interview that was done with Stark on a blog that was posted in 2004, and I don't exactly know the source of this, so I quote it with some hesitation, but the interviewer asked Stark about his faith, and he responds in this interview, "Though I've never been an atheist, atheism is an act of faith. It says I believe there is no God, but I don't know what I believe. I was brought up a Lutheran in Jamestown, North Dakota. I have trouble with faith. I'm not proud of this. I don't think it makes me an intellectual. I would believe if I could, and I may be able to before it's over. I would welcome that." And I don't know if that's, you know, his perspective. That was said 10 years ago, if that's what he said. It's very interesting. I mean, here's a man who is noticing, apparently as an unbeliever, the benefits of Christianity. But he's almost persuaded, but not taken over the edge. And I was thinking about that, his viewpoint in comparison to Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who I've thoroughly enjoyed reading this summer as well, her two memoirs. And She also writes, particularly in her second memoir, Nomad, about Christianity and how appreciative, admiring she is of many things in Christianity. Sadly, she talks about Christianity mainly like it consists of just Roman Catholicism, and actually has some kind of unkind things to say about evangelical Christians. I don't think she really understands conservative Protestantism in comparison to Roman Catholicism, or sort of liberal Protestantism versus confessional Christianity. I would pray that maybe someone would introduce her to confessional Christianity. I feel the same, sort of the same way about Rodney Stark. But it's still striking that these two intellectuals, we might call them, recognize so many valuable and winsome things about the Christian faith. And would that they would only understand that there is even more. There is even more about Christ that they might find so very lovely if they could understand the gospel, the good news about what God has done for us through Christ. Well, anyway, I hope perhaps I'll be able to do some more of these in the future. Again, I've got the ideas. I also, in the last couple of weeks, have been reading through the 28th edition of the Nestle-Aland Greek New Testament. I also read David Trobisch's little handbook, introduction to that. I've got some ideas of doing some further podcasts. I occasionally have people request. I've had some people request that I do some episodes on some particular topics. I'm actually working on a couple of articles, academic articles related to some of those topics. So maybe, God willing, in the future, I will be able to do more of these Word magazines. Till then, God bless and take care.
Doers, blossom, and